gentlemen, it is hockey night in New York. Welcome to the program, everyone. It is Sunday, March 10th, 2019, and we have another wonderful show coming up for you this evening, ladies and gentlemen. Randy Marshall from Newsday will be joining us around 9:45 to talk Belmont and hopefully quell any paranoia that might be going on around Islander country, worrying about whether or not this arena is going to get built or not. Looking forward to that conversation. We're going to talk plenty of Isles here. Not the best week, but we're going to get into that. The Isles got to do a little brain checking, as the song says, because rough week and the last 14 games before the end of the season are upon us. And as we all know, they are extremely crucial. My name is Sean Cuff, the Tony Stabile. Tony, how are you?
It is Sunday, and I'm exhausted. I hate this spring ahead bullshit. I'm telling you, I can't stand
it. Wow. Okay, right off the top here, pal. You're not messing around.
I'm tired.
You don't like the daylight saving.
No, I'm tired.
Sorry.
Tired.
Well, hey, on the bright side, there's more sunlight, pal. You know,
there
you
is.
And I walk out of work at 5 o'clock, and it's depressingly dark anymore.
It's really not the spring ahead thing that bothers me. It's the fall behind. I mean, why do we need to do this anymore? It's prehistoric times.
I don't know, but Tony,
change the freaking times? I mean, come on. It's silly.
That's not why we do this show, and that's not for us to worry about.
Well, you asked me how I was
doing. So we just got to deal with it.
You asked me how I was doing it, so I'm telling you.
All right. Fair enough, Tony. You did. That's true. Well, folks, thank you so much for joining in. Great show coming up. Right off the top, want to make a nice little special announcement that we were hinting at a little bit before the show here. So, Sunday, April 6th, when the Isles take on the Caps in D.C. for the final game of the regular season, us here at Hockey Night in New York, along with Isles Meetups and Yes Men Outfitters, will be hosting a nice little viewing party at Boss Croker's in Wantagh. Going to be a great time. That is located at 1871 Wantagh Avenue. And not only can you get there, you know, if you're in the vicinity easily by car, it is a short walk from the train station. So if you feel like coming down, having a good time, you want to leave the car at home, take a little train ride. And again, short little walk. We're going to have a pregame show, Hockey Night New York pregame show at 5 p.m. The game will start at 7. Going to be raffles, prizes. As I said, Devin from Yes Men will be there. He's going to have swag available. There's going to be $3 pints of Miller, 40-cent wings all night. We will have guests to announce between now and then. If you want to follow Isles Meetups, you can follow them at Isles Meetups. Also follow Yes Men Outfitters at Yes Men Outfitter. Going to be a great night. Come on down. Hopefully that game, and I think it will, it's going to have some pretty big implications for the Isles. Being the last game of the season with this tight race tightening even further if you look at the scores over the weekend, even today. And you have the Isles now, as we know, they got bounced out of first place, but they're still fighting for it. So who knows? That game could determine first place. It could determine home ice. It could determine playoff implications. We do not know, but it will be a big game one way or another. So come down, have some fun with it. It's going to be a great time, great night, exciting stuff. So, Tony, with that behind us, I guess we'll jump into what the Islanders are actually doing on the ice. And this past week hasn't been that great.
Mixed results.
Yes, mixed results, but you're looking for better than mixed. Because the way this team's been playing now for the last week or two, maybe you want to even argue even longer. But, you know, you get two wins. That sandwich between two losses. I mean, I know we covered the game against Philly last week, but, you know, you have these two teams that are below you in the standings. You're supposed to win these games now. I suppose you have to look at it with a little perspective here. Philadelphia's playing a lot different than they were earlier in the season. They're winning a lot more games than they were. They're playing better hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing carefree hockey because they're out of it. Is that an excuse for the Islanders? No.
Nope.
Not necessarily, but they get the 5-4 shootout win over the Senators at the Coliseum on Tuesday night. That had the whole controversial Tkachuk interference that tied the game. He barreled into Robin Lehner, who subsequently was hurt as a result of the play. I think, you know, more than anything else, that's pretty much the most important outcome to come of that.
Mm-hmm.
Was his injury. He hasn't rejoined the team yet, so that's certainly an area of concern that we'll discuss later in the show. Whether you want to argue whether it was an interference or not, it's funny because they went back and forth. First, they called it a goal on the ice, I believe. Then the officials huddled. Then they called it no goal. Then Ottawa challenged. Then they called it a goal. Look, after seeing it a couple of times, Nelson gave him a shove. I don't really blame them for the call that they ultimately ended at.
No.
Now,
no.
Do I know if, you know, Tkachuk projected himself into Leonard at all, or if he could have held up? Maybe he could have, but the optics for me was I'm okay with the call. I'm not okay with the fact that the Isles let the Senators come back and tie it after being up 4-2. But at the end of the day,
I mean,
they get the win in the shootout. They get the 2 points. But, you know, this is unfortunately now becoming a little bit more of a trend where the Islanders aren't putting their best foot forward in these games. It continued Thursday, we'll touch on. It continued into yesterday, obviously. And, you know, is it time to panic? I say no, definitely not. But they certainly have to, you know, get their acts together because, you know, if this really continues any further beyond last night, then, you know, I'm going to blame fans less and less for hitting the panic button because, you know, granted, we talked about last week how the Islanders would do for maybe a little bit of a rut and, you know, because of how great that they've been playing. But look, it's poorly timed and they have teams around them that are playing well. I mean, you look what Carolina's doing. You look what Pittsburgh is doing. Columbus is still kind of up and down. But look, there is a threat there. So they have to get their act together and they got to get back on the winning track. And it has to happen. Because they could essentially put the nail in the coffin with Columbus trying to catch them. I mean, if they win tomorrow night, I'm pretty sure we could feel pretty good about the Islanders leaving them in the dust between now and the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have the win in Ottawa on Thursday. Flip gets 2 goals. This guy's unbelievable. He's got 15 goals in the season. I don't think a lot of people before the season expected 5. So we'll
take that.
I don't
think a lot of people expect him to make the team at all.
Right. Zika gets his 19th goal on an empty netter, so he's approaching 20, which is huge for him. And then you go into last night, you get the 5-2 loss on Bill Torrey night. You would have liked to have think that with all the Islanders alumni in the building, the big hoopla about it, that these guys would have shown up for, you know, for the legend that is Bill Torrey. And they lay a big egg again against Philadelphia. They have the 4-1 loss last weekend. Now it's 5-2 last night. And, you know, not good. Definitely not good. Something we're going to have to discuss. And then you have the controversial hit from Voracek on Boychuk. I mean, that was – I mean, you can argue all day about the Tkachuk situation, but this was clear as day.
Right.
I mean, the guy, you know – I don't even think Boychuk was necessarily even going in to hit Voracek, but it was obviously a defensive play on – you know, it was an anticipation play. He saw Boychuk come in and he threw him the shoulder. And it was dirty. It was – you know, and look, two games is good for me. 2-game suspension, I mean – what difference that makes to the Islanders? Not much, really. You know, but okay, it was recognized. They got the suspension, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly to me, this is another bad loss to a team behind them in the standings. And, you know, I think there's some element of concern here. But with all of that said, Tony, how does it feel to be Tony Stabile?
Well, look, you know, I'm looking at this week as this, okay? They played 2 bad games against the same team in the same building, okay? So do the Flyers kind of have their number right now? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look at it that way. You can look at the 2 games against Ottawa and look and see that they didn't play their best hockey, yet they were able to win both of those games, get the 4 points that they needed out of those games, which is, again, a positive. If you look at the good in the game, especially on Tuesday, I think the first 3 goals, all 3 of them were tipped in front of Leonard. I mean, I think the 3rd goal was actually tipped twice on the way in.
Yeah.
And I think Shabbat was the one that had the shot, and I think it deflected twice on the way in. And then the 4th goal, I mean, look, there's nothing that Robin Leonard can do about that. I mean, it was a minor shove by Brock Nelson. Obviously, on the replay, it looked like he pushed him.
I mean, there was some foul through.
There's no question there was.
Yeah.
But the next thing I was going to say is that Tkachuk had put himself in that position because he was going towards the goal. I mean, he was going to the crease. There was no if Nelson hadn't stopped him, it would have been a goalie interference penalty because there was no way he could have stopped.
Yeah.
He was heading right towards Leonard anyway. So the goal that eventually tied the game, look, on a technicality, the fact that Nelson pushed him in, yes, it's a legit goal. I understand why they called it the way that they did.
Right.
But, I mean, there's really nothing that Leonard or the Islanders could have done differently on that play because, you know, he basically just took the goalie out. So they got what they needed to get done in the shootout, which was very good. Greiss comes in, finishes the game, finishes the shootout. They win the game. And like you said, Flip played well. So, I mean, I'm not ready to hit the panic button yet. They do definitely need to clean up aspects of their game. You know, it was only a week ago where they played an outstanding game against Toronto at home. So it's not like you haven't seen the team that played all that well, you know, for weeks at a time here. They just need to clean it up, and they got it. Thank God they don't have to play Philly for the next couple of weeks. And then they got it. And this is it. Tomorrow's game is big because, you know, Columbus is there. They're kind of hanging around at 79 points. You know, I mean, they're 6 points behind the Islanders. If the Islanders win this game, there's no way Columbus can catch them. 8 points with 13 games to go is near impossible, you know, to for them to make up. So, you know, and Columbus is kind of struggling right now. They got a lot of new faces, and they're not playing all that great. So Carolina cooled off just a little bit. They lost. They got throttled in one game this week, and then they won the last game. They've won 7 out of 10.
Well, didn't they beat Nashville last night?
That's the name. They won. Yeah, they won last night. But they won. I think they got beat. I forget what the score was, but they got beat pretty handily. I believe it was on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. But and then the Caps have won 6 straight. So, you know, I mean, this is, you know, the Islanders are still 39-22-7. They are, you know, they are plus 30 goal differential, which is great. You know, they just need to get back to what has been their strength all year, which is playing their system and not deviating off of it. And I feel like they've done that a little bit recently. They panicked a little bit in a couple of these games, especially the two Philly games, and they've gotten away from what has been so successful for them this year. They just have to get that consistency in a game back, and I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, well, a couple of points to make on what you had to say there. And one thing that stuck out to me is, you know, you mentioned the game against Toronto and how they showed up and they blew the doors off of them and they won that game. But unfortunately, you know, you look over the last stretch of games here, you can go back a decent bit here, and that's unfortunately the exception to the rule. I mean, you look back at the schedule of games here, you know, they dropped the one to Washington. They dropped two to Calgary. Again, rare blip in the radar with the 4-0 win over the Canucks, but then they drop one to Edmonton 4-3. That was that overtime loss. And so you have this stretch of games here where they're struggling, and, you know, you wonder, you know, is it as simple as just deviating from the system? Have the goalies regressed a little bit to the mean a little bit? Or, you know, is it because now that we're into the real meat of the run here, the stretch into the end of the season, is it getting into their heads? Is this a mental thing? Are these guys gripping the sticks a little too tight? Do they realize now that the pressure's on because, you know, we're getting so close to the end and all this jockeying for position, and you see these teams coming up from behind them in Carolina, Pittsburgh, and maybe it's getting into their heads a little bit? I mean, that's what I'm trying to wonder, and I think that's what maybe Barry is trying to figure out here too, is really the mental fortitude of this team, the mettle that this team has, and are they going to be able to persevere now? And what is a pressure situation? Because the majority of the season, you know, going into this stretch that they're in now, no pressure. That nobody expected them to win. Nobody expected them to do anything. Anything that they did do in the standings was just gravy. And even hanging on to first place for as long as they did since January, again, there was still no expectations. Nobody would have batted an eye if they dropped out or if they had lost a stretch of games, you know, that whole fallout that we were waiting for that never came.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now here we are where the games hold so much more importance. They're really on the line. And, you know, is this something that's gotten into the players' heads, or are they just getting away from their system a little bit? They just need to reset and then they'll be all right. What are your thoughts there, Tony?
You know, it seems that this slide has really started, and I'm not going to say poor play because they really haven't played poorly. They just haven't played as well as they were playing for a better part of the season. But it really started when they had to start juggling the lines, when they had to bring Ladd and Hickey back, and when they sent Dalcol down. Hossein, you know, he's obviously back now. It looks like he has now secured himself at least a place in the lineup moving forward.
Yes.
And then, you know, and Hossein was brought up just because on emergency recall.
It was literally just because they weren't sure if they were going to have
enough
guys to fill the squad.
Right. But it's interesting that he was the guy that they ended up bringing up. You know, they had him here for just, it seemed like 24 hours, and then they sent him back down to Bridgeport. He scored a goal today. You've seen he's been, you know, in the lineup and doing some things in Bridgeport. But, you know, honestly, you look at, you know, the way Barzal has played, he's kind of been disappeared. He's kind of, you know, faded away a little bit since he had that really, really hot run in the end of December, beginning of January. Look, the Islanders need – these games that they're losing, 3-1, 4-2, like it doesn't seem like it's more defensive. It seems like it's more they're not getting scoring where they need it. And they need your best players to step up at the times where the team is not playing at their best. Matt Barzal is, it's not a good situation that he's not playing at his best right now. But he's got to get that going, man, because he is the offensive player. He's the offensive star in this team. You know, he had two assists against Philadelphia yesterday, but you know, in the games before that, he had one against Ottawa, nothing the game before, nothing against Philly last week, nothing against Washington before that. You know, he's got to step up, and he's not scoring, which is the thing. He's still setting things up. He's still getting assists, but he needs to score. And, you know, I know it's a lot of pressure to put on a 21-year-old, but unfortunately, this is the situation that he's in, and he's going to have to step up and produce. And that's really, I think, where they're really missing out here, because they're not getting production out of him, and he is the number one guy in this team.
Right, and this has been the team's MO all season. The power play has been lacking, and it still is. It is still dreadful. They were 0-3 Tuesday against Ottawa, then 0-2 again on Thursday against Ottawa, and then last night, 0-3 once again. So, you know, I don't know. I don't remember the last time, you know, I think it was when the wheel was invented, the last time this team scored a power play goal, it feels like. They just can't rely on it, and they haven't all season. They've gotten by, but here's the issue. Now 5-on-5, they are struggling to score goals. And,
yes, yeah.
You know, when your offense isn't coming from the power play, and you're basically your reputation is built on being a great 5-on-5 team, and then that goes away. I mean, where are the goals going to come
from? No, exactly. And if I told you at the beginning in training camp that Filppula would have two less goals than Matthew Barzal in the middle of March, you would tell me that I was nuts. So, you know, this is where I think, you know,
how about
all
two
of this,
more goals than Jordan Eberle?
Oh, I know. That's another that's another problem all to itself.
Good
I mean,
God.
Eberle with only 30 points in 64 games is not that is definitely obvious. It's not ideal, forget about that, but I mean, Cizikas has got more goals than both of them. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, nobody saw that coming. So, there's a lot of things that are going on here, you know, a lot of guys who, you know, they're just not producing in those situations, you know. And you got Nelson too. I mean, Nelson's done, you know, five games, he got one goal. So I mean, you know, like these are your top six guys. These are the guys who have to step up. And when the team is not scoring, you know, I mean, listen, if you look at the last Ottawa game on Thursday, you know, what three goals from the bottom six guys. I mean, you had two from Filppula and Cizikas at his 19th.
Right.
I mean, right. If I had told you also in training camp that Cizikas and Filppula would have 34 goals between the two of them. I mean, that's no one would expect that. I mean, thank God that those guys have produced the way that they have. But you know, the guys on the thing, you know, and this is not. I don't want to say it's a problem. It's not a problem. But these guys have to get back to playing the way that they were before and produce that offense at 5-on-5. Otherwise, you know, this is going to be a much shorter run than we were anticipating.
Yeah, and as listeners know, I mean, we've had high anticipations, high expectations, you know, only a couple of weeks ago. And you know what it is? It's just a shame that this adversity that they're going through is coming when it is. You know, if it had came earlier in the season, put it behind you, and then, you know, you almost got to be a little envious right now of teams like Carolina, who had their struggles earlier in the season, figured things out, and now they're getting hot at the right time. And you know, a team that a lot of people had written off as far as the playoffs go, looks like they're not going to have a problem getting in now. And, you know, they're right there with the Islanders now. You know, they figured their things out, and here they are. So this is a big test for everyone. The players on the ice, the coaching staff. I mean, look, I still have full faith in Barry Trotz that he's going to be able to get these guys playing the way they should be. And you know, I think at the end of the day, whether they get first place, home ice, whatever, I certainly don't think they're going to drop out of the playoffs. It's going to be a real dog race here into the end, but I think Barry's going to have them back playing the right way. And I would like to think this is still more just an unfortunate blip in the radar as opposed to how this team is going to sputter out from here on out to the end of the season.
I agree with you. I mean, I absolutely believe that Barry is going to right the ship here, you know, and get these guys back to where they need to be. But you know, I mean, it's look, and I've heard this over the last, you know, the training deadline. This is the biggest problem, and this is why this is like this, because no one, you know, they didn't do anything, and they should have done something, and that's not it. Because look at
that.
If you look at Columbus, you know, look at Carolina. Carolina really didn't do anything. You know, you look at Columbus, and they changed, you know, like three guys, three main guys on their team right off the bat. They've played poorly, if anything. So it's not always. Sometimes it's you know, you need to. The Islanders are playing well heading into the deadline. other than that little run that they had over in Western Canada, which you can't always go by that because Western Canada trip is brutal on East Coast teams. I mean, I know the Islanders have had success in years past, but you know, that's a brutal trip to take in the middle of the season. So I can't hang my hat on the fact of, oh, this, you know, people saw this coming. You know, they were in first place. I mean, they had been one of the most consistent teams in the NHL. I don't blame him for saying, you know, I'm not going to just make a deal because I feel like I have to shake things up. I didn't think that that was necessary. The struggles that they have right now are that the guys that they have are just not producing the way they were earlier in the season. It's not like they have to, you know, replace. They're looking to replace somebody in the lineup that hasn't been producing all season long. The only guy who really has had a struggle the whole season is Eberle, and he's been playing better as of late, but, you know, if he hadn't gotten off to such a horrible start, his numbers would probably look better than they currently do. The team that is on the ice just needs to get back to what has been successful for them the entire season, and that is playing within a game, and they need to produce it 5-on-5. And if they play their game, those types of chances will continue to come.
Well, Barry had some quotes this morning at practice. Andrew Gross, he also put some lines out. I want to talk about that. It just sounds... According to Trotz, there's certain guys in particular that aren't pulling their weight. He said some guys just need to kind of get their games back. So at least there's some acknowledgement of the fact that guys are, you know, not playing to the where they were previous to this little stretch that we had. So, you know, it remains to be seen whether these line changes are going to make any difference. But let's take a look and see how this might, you know, affect the Islanders' play on the ice. So you got Lee with Barzal and Eberle. You got Ladd back in there with Nelson and Beauvillier. Komarov with Filppula and Bailey. And then you have Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck reunited, which is good to see. So hopefully we see that fourth line back. I guess that's a good sign that Clutterbuck might be back in tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
That's
that line's got to be going also because they create – and they wear teams down too. That's another portion of it is that they wear teams down as the game goes on. Because you send them out there and they just – they were and you've shortened in Toronto, man. They're relentless.
Yeah,
so.
They get a significant amount of ice time. Barry puts them out in important situations. And it's true. They do give the team a boost. Now, I'm not going to say that the team, you know, wins and loses by, you know, the fourth line and how they're going. But they certainly help. There's no doubt about that. So you make a good point about those guys. But I guess just focusing on the top six, really. You're getting Ladd back into the fold. He hasn't really had an opportunity to do much. And when he has been, he hasn't done much. I don't know if he just needs more time to get his legs, you know, playing in these actual games. But, look, I mean, the way this season kind of goes is probably going to rest on those six guys, whoever those six guys end up being from here on out, because that's where the goal scoring needs to come from, and that's what they're lacking. That's what's hurting them right now.
Right.
Again, the power play and getting these goals 5-on-5. They're losing these games where they're only scoring 0, 1, or 2 goals. You know, when you look at these games against Calgary, look at these games against Philadelphia, you got that magic number of 3. You know, Eric Hornick always points it out in the skinny. You know, the record is ridiculous when they score 3 goals. I'm sure it's similar for most teams in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
But the
especially
fact of the matter is
because their goaltending has been so good.
Right, but the fact of the matter is they're struggling to get to that 3-goal mark, that magic number.
Right.
And now we're seeing these mediocre results where they're hovering around 500 hockey, which, you know, I suppose could be worse. But, again, you don't want this team sputtering out into the playoffs. You want this team going out into the end on a, you know, on a high, feeling good about themselves and, you know, being ready to get out there for some playoff hockey. So they definitely, you know, again, it's not time to hit the panic button, but, you know, there's definitely an eyebrow raised. There's some cause for concern. They got to turn around. And when you have meaningful games like this, they blew one against Washington. They had an opportunity there to, you know, win that game and maybe
put a little distance between themselves.
For first place.
Sure.
That didn't go so well. And here's another one right here. You have this game now coming up tomorrow against Columbus, who, again, has been up and down. They made these acquisitions. And I think Islander fans, you and I included, will feel much better about this recent stretch of play if they can come out and take care of business tomorrow night at the Coliseum against Columbus.
No question.
Because if they drop tomorrow night's game, it's just going to get worse. Because the competition is let me bring the schedule back up again. But the competition from here on out is not going to be easy. You got Montreal on Thursday, regardless of how they're playing right now. They're always a tough team. Maybe you got to throw away one against Detroit that you should win. But then after that, you got Minnesota, Boston, Montreal, Philadelphia again in Philadelphia, a hot Arizona team, Columbus again, Winnipeg. So, you know, they really got to start doing what they were doing, bagging a lot of points, because these games are going to end up being very critical.
Yep.
So they really do got to get their acts together. And it's got to start tomorrow night. So I guess we'll take it before we take a break.
Washington,
here,
by the way, is up 2-1 on Winnipeg with about 8 minutes to go, it seems.
Yeah, not a good sign. That's going to make first place a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, that's why that April 6th game, that Saturday night game that closes out the season, might end up being huge if the Islanders get their act back together. That could be literally a battle for first place.
Mm-hmm.
But, Tony, you know what? Why don't we take a quick break right here, reassess, and then we'll come back and we'll segue into Randy Marshall, who's coming at 9:45. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York. You can tune in live or for the archives at HockeyNightNY.com. And we will be right back.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York at HockeyNightNY.com, the premier live podcast covering the New York Islanders and the NHL at large from our studios right here on Long Island, hosted by Sean Cuthbert and Tony Seville. Tune in weekly during the season Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for insights on the team, great special guests, and commentary on all the happenings around the league. If you happen to miss us live, all shows can be streamed or downloaded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at the same address, HockeyNightNY.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Stitcher, where you can subscribe and never miss a show, no matter what your preferred platform. Question for the guys? Comments? Interested in a sponsorship? Please contact us at HockeyNightNewYork@gmail.com for any and all inquiries. We appreciate all the support, and as always, let's go Islanders! Love repping your favorite Long Island hockey team? Can't get enough orange and blue swag? Look no further than Yes Men Outfitters, the independent lifestyle brand born on the island to support the game, the team, and the players you love. Visit YesMenOutfitters.com for a wide selection of themed shirts, hats, hoodies, and yes, even pajamas. All apparel is designed and created in-house with the same passion and dedication as your favorite team on the ice. So upgrade your wardrobe and show off your pride today by visiting YesMenOutfitters.com. And don't forget to use promo code HockeyNightNY for 10% off your order. That's YesMenOutfitters.com.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Hockey Night in New York with Sean Cuthbert and Tony Stabile. So, Tony, let's pick it up where we left off here, pal. And I guess we got to discuss the D here, too, because Johnny Boychuk hurt by Voracek, and we don't know when he's getting back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously.
I don't believe there was any indication from Barry that he was coming back tomorrow. In fact, he said there's a good chance he could miss tomorrow night's game.
Yes.
So by default there, you're pretty much automatically seeing Thomas Hickey back into the lineup.
That's a given.
The pairings are looking, a little interesting. You got Letty next to Mayfield. You got Pellick and Pollock there sticking together. And then you have Thomas Hickey with Devon Taves. So, look, I don't think anybody was too excited about Ladd and Hickey coming back. I mean, we had mentioned the fact that Ladd would be a boost. He would be helpful, you know, especially replacing a guy like Kunok on the lineup. I am a little, you know, it's funny. I glazed over this before when we were talking about the forwards, but one guy that was missing from the forward lineup in the what Andrew posted today was Michael Dalcol. So he might end up coming back out, which may be to the dismay of a lot of onlookers here, because I think he's been playing well since he came back.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this is very strange. And now, granted, I guess it's just because players got to go somewhere for practice and the drills and stuff like that. But there's 6 forward lines that they had, right? Five. And the fifth one was Johnston and Kunockel, centered by Dalcol. Mm. So I don't know what that's all about. Again, I think it's just because they had to throw these guys somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't look into them trying a centering experiment with Michael Dalcol, but there he is.
Mm.
So I imagine that this – look, Barry has been known to pull some tricks out of his hat. You know, even though these are the lines we saw today, doesn't necessarily mean that's what we're going to see tomorrow night.
Of course.
In the game. But if we're going to just go with that assumption for now, it looks like MDC comes out of the lineup after having a promising couple of games since coming back, which – to me, it's a little bit disappointing. I'd like to see him get some more time out there. But look, I guess Barry just isn't satisfied with what he's been seeing lately. And maybe, you know, he's saying to himself, look, maybe getting the kick in the pants for Ladd and Hickey back into the lineup, getting these guys in there, maybe they can finally click with these guys and finally produce after all the time that they missed.
I mean, I think he looks at Michael Dalcol as a guy who can be out away from the team and then come in and play well right off the bat, which is exactly what happened when he came back from Bridgeport. So I think what he's trying to do here is trying to get Andrew Ladd going, because he knows that when Ladd is playing well, he can help this team and he should help this team. But he hasn't done that yet, and that's really – I mean, he does it in little spurts. He has not been able – he hasn't played well enough yet to force Barry's hand to move him off of that third line, where he's not going to get the offensive opportunities that he would playing on one of the top two lines. So, I mean, he really has to – he's got to prove something at this point, because he's going – the way Dalcol is playing, if Ladd doesn't get it going, Dalcol is going to pass him on the depth chart. And he will be in the lineup on an every night basis. So I think that this is Barry saying he's the veteran. We're going to try to get him going and put him out there in some offensive situations. And maybe he will get, in turn, Barzal going and, you know, seeing what's going on, you know, try to jumpstart some of these other players in the lineup. But really, I think that really what it comes down to is that Ladd's got to get another shot. And Dalcol is not a guy who seems to have to play, you know, with the team on a nightly basis in order to get something out of him. So if you pull him out of the lineup, you give Ladd a shot, you can throw Dalcol back in there, and he's shown that he can come into the lineup cold and play well. So it's at some point or another, we knew that this had to happen, and I guess it's better to do it now than when you're forced by an injury.
Yeah, and like with Hickey, I think that's what we're going to see here. The fact that they made Dalcol a regular call-up as opposed to an emergency call-up.
Yeah, he's here
like
for the rest of the year
now. They like what they've seen from him. And they're going to work into the lineup when they see fit. But when they're struggling, when they put up a game like they did against Philadelphia, I mean, you can't blame Barry Trotz for shaking things up and trying to get something better out of these guys. So is it a shame that MDC is the guy who kind of ends up taking the fall? Not so much as in the sense of getting blamed, but the guy who ends the odd man out here. You know, and for Ladd,
who else would you take out of the lineup?
Right.
You really can't.
The only other option would possibly be Beauvillier, but... You know, I I'm fine with him taking Dalcol in the lineup because, as you said, I think he's going to find his way back in. And I think one nice thing that we have seen since Ladd and Hickey came back from their injuries is it doesn't matter, you know, what your veteran you are. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter what your contract looks like. Barry doesn't care. He's
right.
Putting in the guys
that he feels
is going to help them win the game.
Right.
So we've seen that with Ladd already. The fact that, you know, Hickey's only gotten into one game so far. Ladd hasn't gotten into many games yet. So that doesn't matter. And that's something, a breath of fresh air, I think, for this team. Because you look at years past and, you know, you would see guys like Capuano and Wade almost stubbornly keeping guys in the lineup that just didn't belong there. And I think it's ultimately just because of their veteran status or whatever the contract status was. So, you know, and it even goes even further to, you know, Gar Snow and the guys he was choosing to keep up or keep down based on waiver status and stuff like that. So,
right.
At least with Barry up top, you know, look, if he thinks one of these veteran guys, you know, are having a bad game or having a bad stretch or a guy like Ladd is not ready to come back in, he doesn't have a problem having them watching the press box. So I think that's good, and there's no favoritism towards these guys. So, and I think, look, another element to having Ladd back is I don't think he's going to get on power play one, but maybe he gets some time on the second power play. Just, I mean, we're beating a dead horse at this point, Tony, but the power play is just absolutely dreadful.
It is.
Something's got to change.
It is. But, you know, honestly, they were playing well this season and for the most part of the season, and the power play has been terrible pretty much the entire season. So, I mean, I you can look at that now and say, oh, this team is not playing well and the power play sucks. The power play has not been good basically the entire season, okay, other than like the first month or a couple of weeks of the season. They haven't really played well. So
yeah,
they've shown that they can play well without the power play being an elite power play unit. Of course, when you're not winning games, of course, the glaring, you know, the one thing that glares on this team is that the power play hasn't been good. But, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's the reason why they're not picking up points right now. I think that has more to do with the fact of
it. But it's certainly a contributing factor.
It's just
because they've gotten by without the power play for the most part. Of the season here doesn't mean you don't look for ways to improve it.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's not. I don't feel like that's the root cause of this whole thing because they've been played well all season
without having, you know, with that being a side note to everything. So,
yeah.
I definitely look. Obviously, you'd like the power play to get better. You know, there's only one player in the AHL right now that could possibly help that, and you're not going to see him right now. So, right now they have to kind of figure out whatever it is that, you know, that's not working and try to fix it. And they've been doing that for a long time now. They're not happy with what's going on. You've heard them say it. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, is it too late in the season with the same personnel to say, okay, well, this, you know, let's try this now, let's try that now. They think they've tried pretty much everything they could possibly try. What else is there that they haven't done yet? I mean,
I don't know.
Exactly.
Without being there at the practice, I have no idea. But I mean, the fact that we've gone so many games.
Well, you see in the games. You don't have to see it in practice. You can see it in the games.
No, I know. It's just, look, we all knew coming into this year that, you know, having a, you know, high powered offense wasn't exactly part of the expectation, but. You know, I think we all thought the power play would be better than 26th overall at a 15.4% clip.
I agree with you. I agree, especially after, well, I mean, after they play last year. It seems everything from last year is completely reversed. So
when you got a man up and you got Matty Barzell, Anders Lee, and, you know, guys like Ryan Pulock, even though he wasn't really on the first unit most of the year, but you got guys like that, you still would like to think that they'd be able to put some pucks in the net, and it just hasn't been happening.
No, not at all.
And,
I mean,
and that's what puts it under the microscope when you go through a stretch like this. You know, when they're not scoring goals. Because here's the thing. If the power play is not going, the 5-on-5's got to bail it out, which it hasn't, right? Mm-hmm. And if the 5-on-5 isn't going, then there's no excuse. The power play's got
to. Someone's got to pick it up.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
I mean, look, I told you, okay, Filppula and Cizikas have more goals than Eberle and Barzal. I mean, that's crazy. You have a first-place team where your bottom two centers have more goals than your top two offensive forwards. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yes, it is, Tony. It is. Well, look, again, you just got to hope that this is just the struggle here and they're going to get.
I think it is.
Together.
I mean, like I said, man, we've watched this team. You know, they've won 39 games this up to this point in the season. This is not like, you know, we went through just a 2-week stretch and watched them play well. And now we're all shocked that they're not playing well anymore. We watched this team play well for 3 months. So they're going through a gully. Okay, they're going through a bit of a downturn right now, and they need to figure it out. And good teams do this. Good teams struggle, and then they come back and they play well. You saw Washington do it. They haven't played. You know, they've gone through some ups and downs this season, and now they're in first place again. They've won 6 straight. The Islanders can do the same thing. They just need to figure out what is the problem, okay, and figure out what's going to help them get back to being successful. And what's going to do that is having their offensive players actually be offensive. And Nelson and Barzell and Eberle
Bailey.
And Bailey and these guys are
Lee, all those guys.
Yeah, no, I know, man, I know. I mean, I know I'm picking on Eberle and Barzell here, but I mean,
it's really all of them collectively.
I agree.
I agree.
They
all
you.
Just hit a rut. And look, you can point out the posts that they've hit and the. The crossbar.
Everybody hits posts. Everybody
right, exactly.
hits posts.
Exactly. Like, look, you got to put the puck in the net. And, but yes, I'm with you. I think they're going to get out of this. I think they're going to be fine. But look, you have to discuss it. Maybe we're making it sound worse than it is. I don't know. I mean, I know we're not making it sound as bad as some people on the internet. I know that.
No, we'll always be. It's a couple notches below that. That's
right.
For sure. But.
Right. You can't just, you know, look
you
at
can't
this,
gloss over it either.
You can't look at this past week or two and just pretend like everything's sunshine
and
rainbows.
And
you know?
We sat here for 45 minutes and discussed how, you know, it's nothing. It's bad. It's
right.
Fine. I mean, we would be doing a disservice to you. We would be. So.
Look, and not only that, I mean, you have now concerns with Johnny Boychuk and Robin Lehner. I think Boychuk is definitely more of a shorter-term thing, even if he doesn't get in tomorrow, which he may. I think we're going to see him back soon, which is good because overall he's had a pretty good year. And
yeah.
They need him, especially in these types of games that they're playing now. Johnny Boychuk needs to be in the lineup. So hopefully maybe just a night off at most is all that he needs. However, the other issue of concern now with the injuries is Robin Lehner. Because as far as we know up until this point, he did a little skating on his own finally, but that's about it. And unsurprisingly, Barry has been very in the shadows about what's going on. I mean, they're not even acknowledging whether or not this might be a concussion, which we all seem to believe that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask Barry Trotz, it's an upper body injury.
They said he did some on-ice work today, which is a good sign.
Right.
I mean, they don't even allow him on the ice unless they move past the first protocol. So.
Well, look, that that is going to be the biggest point of concern here injury-wise. And that's not to say that Thomas Greiss can't handle the load while he's gone, because I think that he can.
No question.
I mean, look no further than the way he's played all year and the numbers. But they had a very nice thing going.
They do. They do. They have a nice thing going. They need to continue it. That's the thing.
You know, and you might be able to argue that that has been a product of, you know, hey, you get a couple games here, I get a couple games there.
And they, and the
keep
two
the legs fresh.
And the two guys have a good relationship, so they play off each other,
right,
which is good.
And we haven't really hit a point in the season where Barry Trotz has had to rely on one guy and one guy only.
Agreed.
You know, even if one of them had what you'd consider a rough game, and they have been few and far between, but he hasn't been, his hand hasn't been forced to say, well, look, I got to start Leonard or I got to start Greiss because the other
right
guy's just not pulling his weight. He's really had the convenience to just flipping a coin each day, to be honest with you, and saying, okay, this is the guy I want going in tonight. You know, so.
And he's had his matchups and guys who, players he likes against certain teams or whatever,
right,
and they've rewarded him for that pretty much every time out. So.
Right, but now he's in a position, depending on how long-term this is, where he's in that situation where he's going to have to just go with one and hope that he can handle it. And we have
right
seen in the past that Thomas Greiss, you know, with maybe too large of a workload, it does take its toll on him. So that's what's concerning to me. If this becomes a longer-term injury for Leonard, I'm a little concerned. I mean, we all saw what Greiss was able to do in Halak's absence a couple years ago, yes.
I was going to say,
but
he was phenomenal in that first
round. He was.
Round. And
well,
he, and
not
they,
just
and
the
they,
first round. I'm talking about during the regular season.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
I'm not forgetting about that.
Leading up into going into the playoffs, the way he played in the first round, and he was busy.
He was spectacular. Yeah, he absolutely was. But
yep,
we have also seen the other side of that, where he's been in a position where he's the only option, really. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, the more games that he plays, it seems like almost the more tired out he got, or whatever it is. But
he
would have some rough games. Is basically the point that I'm trying to make. Mm-hmm. So if that situation could be avoided, I think everybody would.
Yeah, I mean, this is a different season only because everything has been revamped between the coaching staff and the goalie coaches and so I'm willing to look past that at this point. I know it was a rough night. The whole team had a rough night last night. But, you know, I mean, Thomas came in cold off the bench, which is not an easy thing to do if you've ever played hockey, to be sitting for two and a half periods and have nothing and then come out ice cold and have to, you know, go into the game late in the game where a team has momentum that they just scored the tying goal, play through overtime, and then in the shootout. I mean, it was a big step in for Greiss, you know, to be able to do that. So I have a lot of confidence in Thomas Greiss right now. I know last year was a rough year for him. I know we were rough on him for the year that he had. There was, you know, some question marks of which Thomas Greiss were we going to get this year. Was it the one from 2 years ago? Was it one from last year? And he's answered those questions and played spectacularly this season. So
absolutely,
this is why you have a guy like him around. He is, you know, in my opinion, one of, if not the best backup, you know, at least in this conference. So, I mean, he's been very good this year. So, you know, hopefully the thing with Robin Leonard is not, you know, too dramatic, and he's not out for that long. And to see that he was back on the ice today, I feel a little encouraged by that.
Me too, Tony. Me too. But right now, we got to take a break because on the other side, Randy Marsh is going to be joining us. So, folks, once again, thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York. Catch us live or for the archives at HockeyNightNY.com. We will take that break, and then we'll be right back with Randy Marshall from Newsday.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York at HockeyNightNY.com, the premier live podcast covering the New York Islanders and the NHL at large from our studios right here on Long Island, hosted by Sean Cuthbert and Tony Seville. Tune in weekly during the season Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for insights on the team, great special guests, and commentary on all the happenings around the league. If you happen to miss us live, all shows can be streamed or downloaded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at the same address, HockeyNightNY.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Stitcher, where you can subscribe and never miss a show, no matter what your preferred platform. Question for the guys? Comments? Interested in the sponsorship? Please contact us at HockeyNightNewYork@gmail.com for any and all inquiries. We appreciate all the support, and as always, let's go Islanders! Love repping your favorite Long Island hockey team? Can't get enough orange and blue swag? Look no further than Yes Men Outfitters, the independent lifestyle brand born on the island to support the game, the team, and the players you love. Visit YesMenOutfitters.com for a wide selection of themed shirts, hats, hoodies, and yes, even pajamas. All apparel is designed and created in-house with the same passion and dedication as your favorite team on the ice. So upgrade your wardrobe and show off your pride today by visiting YesMenOutfitters.com. And don't forget to use promo code HockeyNightNY for 10% off your order. That's YesMenOutfitters.com.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Hockey Night in New York with Sean Cuthbert and Tony Stabile. And joining us right now from Newsday is Randy Marshall. Randy, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Randy, the name of this song going on in the background right now is called Reaching Home. And the Islanders are trying to reach a home of their own over at Belmont next to the track where the horsies are. And there's been some recent paranoia coming out in the fan base. There was an article that came out, I believe, LIBN.com, talking about a potential delay. So we were hoping you could kind of come on, help us out, and to perhaps, put these worries away, that things are on track. So really, I guess the big question is, Randy, what is the latest? Where do we currently stand? And what is expected to or could happen between now and groundbreaking in May and June?
Okay, so first of all, there is no delay. So let's start with that. There has been some incorrect, erroneous reporting, some misinterpretation of things that were said at a recent state meeting. I don't even know where some of it came from, but there's no delay. What Empire State Development, which is the state government arm that's handling this project, has always said is that the final environmental impact statement would be out sometime in the second quarter. The second quarter stretches all the way till the end of June. So it was never guaranteed, and there was never even an assumption made by anyone with knowledge that that final environmental impact statement would come out in April, even though, you know, April would be the start of the second quarter. So that's number one. While there had been talk from the Islanders' perspective of breaking ground in May, I'll be honest and tell you I never really thought that was realistic, given that I didn't necessarily think that the final environmental impact statement was coming out in April. And even if it did, I didn't think a groundbreaking in May was necessarily realistic. They are still on track to groundbreak at some point after the final environmental impact statement and findings and some other approvals are done. I don't think they have any interest in breaking ground before the Belmont Stakes anyway. So I would put it sometime in the summer if I were a betting woman. Maybe September at the latest, but I'd be surprised if it went that late. But no matter what, everything we have heard is that they're expecting that they are still on target to have an arena open by the 2021-2022 season. That's always been the goal. Nothing so far has changed that. And that's where we're at. So
that's – Go ahead, go ahead.
No, that's all I was going to say. I mean, you know, there's more to talk about, right? There are still issues to be worked out, and we can get to that. I'm sure, you know, you guys can ask me about whatever you want, but there are issues to be worked out. It's not like this was never going to be some kind of smooth process where there were no bumps or you know, slight things that made it go from April to May or whatever it may be. I don't see anything about this project that makes it seem like it's not on track.
Well, that's music to our ears, and I'm sure it's music to a lot of our listeners' ears as well. But I guess keeping in mind that possibility of any sort of doubt, I mean, we know that there has been some opposition that's been noted. I guess in regards to that, how serious or large is the opposition at this point? And are there any hurdles, factions, or individuals that could actually threaten the project this late in the game?
So you're asking me two different questions. I'll get to both. One is the opposition. The other is are there hurdles? I'll deal with the second one first because to me it's actually more important. The hurdles that remain are dealing with the questions that were left outstanding from the environmental studies, right? Fundamentally, that's about traffic and transit. Those are the biggest remaining question marks. From what I gather, state officials and others are dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. There are conversations that are ongoing between whether it be the state or the MTA or the developers or other players in the room. From what I gather, this is a conversation that is continuing. It is not something they are ignoring, and it is something they are dealing with. Do they still need to come out with some kind of an answer in terms of traffic and transit? Yes, I think so. If indeed the environmental impact statement doesn't come out until, say, May or early June, as opposed to April, perhaps that means that that's because they're coming up with, you know, a more detailed solution to some of the traffic and transit question marks. That is just my guess, but I wouldn't be surprised. So put that aside. Opposition-wise, you've got a couple of different groups, right? You have some within the Elmont community who are opposed, particularly to the arena. You have others, particularly in Floral Park, who are opposed to the retail village part of this plan, and I say that carefully. There has been a lot of talk of calling this a mega mall. It is neither mega nor a mall. It is 470,000 square feet, which is not even close to, say, a Roosevelt Field. It is an open, walkable retail village. It is not an enclosed mall. So that's a misnomer. It's poor choice of words, even if it is to try to rile people up. There is one group of organized opposition. It's a group called Elmont Against the Mega Mall. I have yet to figure out exactly who is funding them, but they are raising an awful lot of money. Last time I checked, it was more than $600,000. It is unclear what direction they plan on going in or what they're looking to get out of the deal, whether they want to stop the project altogether, whether they want certain things out of it. It's unclear right now. I don't expect that they're going to stop it altogether. I expect that they'll, you know, get their questions answered or get something out of it or what have you and move forward. But that remains a question mark for me, that group. And I don't know enough to know exactly where that's going to go. But for now, to me, the state is crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's. As long as they continue to do the process properly, and so far they have been, from what I can tell, I don't see anything stopping the project in its tracks. There is always the threat of a lawsuit with a project like this, just because of its size and scope. And is it possible that someone will file one? Yes. Is it likely that such a thing would create a lengthy delay? No, I don't think so at this point. I could be wrong, but at this point, I think that things are on track to move forward and to move forward on the kind of timetable that the developers, the Islanders, and the state are all looking for. That's not to say that the state and the developers aren't trying to deal with the concerns. They're very well aware of legitimate, valid concerns, and I think everybody wants to address them, and I think that's a really important point. Just dismissing everybody's concerns is not the right strategy here. There are some valid concerns, like traffic and transit. They need to be dealt with, and the state knows that. The developers know that, and the Islanders know that. And that's okay. There are other concerns that may not be as valid. But the valid ones need to be dealt with. As long as they are, this thing should go forward. And that's where I'm coming from on it.
Gotcha. And I guess the first thing I want to follow up on is, you know, you talk about answering these questions about traffic and the community and all that. I mean, who are they answering to as far as, like, who actually has the power when they come back with the answers that, you know, the Islanders and the people who are putting this project together, when they have these answers and they present them, who are the ones who are going to sit there and say, well, this isn't enough or this isn't satisfactory to the point where they have the power to say, because of that, we're going to have to derail this project or postpone it or what have you? Who kind of has that power?
No one has the power, quote unquote, to flat out derail it, right? people can say that the final environmental impact statement isn't good enough or doesn't address the concerns enough, and a lawsuit could be filed, right? Then it'll be up to a judge or and a court, depending on where they file, to determine whether there's any legitimacy to those concerns. But if the final environmental impact statement addresses traffic and transit, and if it answers the questions that were raised during this interim period where there have been all these comments made after the draft, the first version of the environmental impact statement came up, if those questions are addressed and are addressed well, if it seems like a good faith effort is being made and traffic and transit is being addressed, I think that there's not a straightforward way to be able to say that it's not. There's nobody with the power to all of a sudden say, nope, that's it. You didn't do this well enough. You have to stop this. And it stopped. It'll ultimately, if it needs to, it'll go through a court. It may not get that far. The other factor in here that I think is important is whether or not the elected officials are supportive. If state senators and state assemblymen and women are supportive of the project, that'll help move the ball forward. Right now, generally speaking, the attitude that I'm hearing is sort of mixed. They want answers on transit, but the most important person in the room is actually a state senator from Queens named Leroy Comrie, who has now been designated as being part of a key board that will have an approval over this project. And what he told me personally and on the record is he supports the project. He likes the project. He needs to see the questions like traffic and transit answered. But he believes it will go forward, and he is very appreciative of the amount of community involvement that has been done in this project, particularly in terms of public hearings and the like. And he thinks Empire State Development has done this well. His support, to me, is a clear indicator that while he's not definitive in saying, oh, yes, I'm going to approve this, no problem, it sounds to me like there will, assuming that his questions get answered, there will not be definitive roadblocks standing in the way. There are a couple of state boards that need to approve this. There's his board, which is called the Public Authorities Control Board, and there's one other called the Franchise Oversight Board, which is a board that deals with racing issues. I don't expect that as long as the basic concerns are addressed, I don't think either one is going to veto this. So, you know, again, no guarantees, but I don't see significant roadblocks remaining, and it's not that easy to completely derail a project of this size and scope. It's if you need to make some changes to get the community on board, you make the changes to get the community on board. Could they reduce the retail village by 20,000 square feet so that it's not quite as large to make a few more people happy? Sure. Can they put a buffer up by the elementary school? Absolutely. Can they add more trains? Yes. Can they work with the MTA on maybe a larger effort to create a full-time station? Yes. If they show good faith in working on all of those issues, should this project go forward? Absolutely. So that's my take.
Well, you touched on something that I definitely want to touch on, and that's the transit portion of it. As someone who deals with the Long Island Railroad on a daily basis, I can tell you that these people do not have a really good grasp on what they do. And they don't do it really well. I know that they've been a little reluctant to even say that they can make it a full-time station or that they would have the money in order to do so. What is the word on the street when it comes to what's going on with possibly making that a full-time station? Because I know that's something that the residents around Belmont are actually quite excited for. So is that still
and
a possibility?
Something that, you know, we at Newsday at the editorial board, we support full heart. Yeah, we would really like to see a full-time station there. So that's something that we are looking at carefully. Look, it's not inexpensive to create full-time service at Belmont. It's a little bit of a complicated situation in terms of that spur and how that spur works. It's not simple. But our advocacy has been, and what I think there is a solution in somewhere, is a public-private partnership of sorts that may involve money from the developer and from the development team, that may involve some kind of a value capture scenario where the money, future property, future tax revenue, future value of the property is basically goes toward the paying of a station in some kind of a relationship between the MTA and the development team. That's what I am hoping for. I have no knowledge firsthand that that's what's going to happen. So don't anybody quote me that this is all of a sudden the new answer. It is what I think should happen and what I think is a very strong possibility that it could. They are capable of finding a solution here. Everybody needs to get in a room and make it happen. From what I gather, there are ongoing conversations. Whether those ongoing conversations are along the lines I just described, I don't know. But I do believe that there are conversations being had and that there will be or can be a solution that can be reached. Everyone seems to be understanding that this is an issue that needs to be dealt with. I understand the notion that two trains in each direction is not sufficient, and I think that there's an effort underway to figure out how to do more. It's not easy. The MTA doesn't have a lot of money, and they certainly don't have extra money to go toward a big project like this. So they need to get creative, and they need to think differently, and the development team needs to get involved, and they need to find an answer. And I believe that some of the sort of back and forthing and wondering, delay, not delay, whatever, all this chatter right now as we wait may in part be as inside a room somewhere folks are trying to come up with an answer to some of the questions that we still have. And if that means that come early June or come even sooner than that, we have a transit answer and then the final environmental impact statement comes out, that's fine. If we have no more transit answer, then I think that could become a concern, but I do not expect that's going to be the end result here. I think we're going to get more of an answer. I don't think that there's also going to be a full-time station necessarily open, you know, the second the arena is, and I think that's okay too. The timetable can be fluid a little bit depending on the situation and depending on what everybody needs to do. But as long as everyone's gearing themselves toward increased transit service at Belmont for both the arena and the community at large, I think we're moving in the right direction. I think it's absolutely the top priority of everyone involved, and I think they all know that it should be the top priority of everyone involved. And if they solve that problem, I think they get an enormous amount of more community buy-in, and in particular support from elected officials, and they know they need that. So that's I think it'll happen. So.
Well, okay. Well, I mean, that's definitely great news. I mean, you know, I mean, that's the thing that I think is like you said, kind of the crux of this whole thing, because the community has been trying, I think, for years in order to for that, and have been clamoring for it, and they've never been able to get any traction on it. So I think that's, you know, I know, because I know people who actually live in that neighborhood right behind Belmont, and mm-hmm. for them to get to any type of mass transit, it's walking, it's to a bus and then to a subway, and it's a real pain in the neck. Whereas if they had the stop is right there, if it was full time year round, they would just be able to go, you know, be able to cut an hour of their commute out of the day to take it. So, you know, just for the residents of that immediate area, that's a bonus right off the bat for them. So I think that would definitely go
I agree.
A long way.
And there are other solutions too, right? It doesn't necessarily, if they can't right away do a full-time station, or if they find that is not the answer, there are other, can they provide, you know, increased shuttle service to Floral Park and to other communities? Are there other, you know, creative solutions where you can find, you know, scooter trains or other type solutions that allow you to get to where you need to be? I think that I don't know. I don't have insider information on this one, so I don't know what they're talking about and what they're not. But as long as they think outside the box and get a little bit, get everybody in a room together and try to think of every possible solution and don't discount anything, I think that they'll come up with a plan that works. The most important thing, honestly, is to deal with the traffic issue that the community seems so worried about in terms of games, which I also think has been overblown. So I'm careful to say, you know, what kind of traffic issue there will be. The talk out of Floral Park is this is going to be like Belmont Stakes every day. This is not going to be like Belmont Stakes every day. So I'm hesitant to even go down that road because I think it has been blown out of proportion.
That's actually funny even to hear that this would be a Belmont takes 110,000 people. This is a 17,000 seat hockey arena. Like I don't,
right.
I don't even know where
that
would
come from. And even with the mall, we're not talking about that kind of crowd coming in and out at the same time every day. Nonetheless, do we want more transit for games? Absolutely. Do we want more transit so that people can come in and out? Absolutely. Do we want some more busing if possible? Sure. You're going to want to do more to get people not driving in their car by themselves to get to a game. Does that mean more Uber pool? Absolutely. Might it mean some fun Islander bus type stuff from Manhattan? I don't know, maybe. You know, they're going to have to come up with probably a multi-pronged kind of thing. But again, I think that that's the kind of conversation that is ongoing that they're trying to figure out. So
right.
There are issues to deal with, but they're not insurmountable.
Okay. I have one last question, and I don't even know if you know the answer to this, but I'll throw it out at you. We know that now that the Islanders, when they make the playoffs, they will be playing the first round of the playoffs at the Nassau Coliseum. You also heard that in that statement that the Nassau Coliseum is not considered by the NHL to be a major league arena. There were some changes. There were some rumors of some changes that were made when they took the building over about dumping cement in the toilets and in the suites and so on and so forth. And there has been some whispers about maybe making some additional changes to the Coliseum so that maybe the Islanders can play more games, if not all of them, there next season. Have you heard anything about any of this? And is that a possibility if you have?
This is obviously a huge subject of conversation. Nassau Coliseum is not an NHL-ready arena. It cannot be the full-time place where the Islanders play in the long term. Anyone who's using that as sort of the reason not to do Belmont, for instance, it's just not true and it's not a valid assumption. So in the long term, the Coliseum, as is right now, will not be the permanent home of the New York Islanders. Could the NHL give the Islanders a pass for a season or two even where they could play full-time at the Coliseum? I think that is possible. I don't know if more work would need to be done. That's also possible. The work they did this year got it into shape so that they could at least play there. It is better than it was. It is not what it would need to be for an NHL team to play there on any kind of a long-term basis. But if the Islanders agree to some kind of a deal where they decide that the best place for them to play is Nassau Coliseum, they've, you know, done well there generally, except for, I guess, more recently. But, you know, they've done well. The fans obviously love it. It's a better experience for the fans. I think it's a better experience for the players in some ways. So could it be their full-time home next season, in the temporary interim period until Belmont is built? I would not discount it. I have not heard anything definitive that those conversations have even begun or are being had. And I have not heard what would be required by the NHL for that to happen. But I do think it's a possibility. At the same time, I put a lot into that statement that you just mentioned, because I do think it's important for everyone to understand that the Coliseum is not a long-term viable option for the New York Islanders. And every fan or resident of Elmont or Floral Park who has been saying, why don't they just play in Uniondale rather than in Belmont, it's not a valid comparison and it's not a valid argument. So I know I sound wishy-washy, I apologize, but I guess what I would say is I think it is possible that a scenario could arrive where they play full-time at Nassau Coliseum in the interim years. I think it would take a little while to get there. You know, there needs to be some conversations between the NHL, the team, and the Brooklyn Sports and Entertainment folks for that to happen. And my guess is some further changes at the Coliseum would be necessary. But even if that does happen, it does not mean that this is a team that can play at the Coliseum any longer than they have to. And so that's the one thing I would caution folks about.
Randy,
but yes,
thank you.
But I would not discount the possibility that they could play their first season. I think it's possible. I think a lot needs to be done to make that happen. So.
Right. Well, Randy, thank you so much for clearing that up for us. Thank you so much for your time. And hopefully you've helped fans, you know, ease the tensions a little bit here and the paranoia. Really appreciate all of it. Please enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, and hopefully we'll have you on again down the road.
I will. I appreciate the time, and thanks so much. Don't get too paranoid, everyone. It'll be okay. But also understand, the one thing I would just caution everyone, the activity on Twitter and the like, there are valid concerns that need to be addressed. The more that we discount the valid concerns, the more of sort of a problem we get to have, I think, down the line. So if we can address the valid concerns, then everything else will fall into place. And that's really the message I'd like folks to take away. But, you know, one step at a time, guys.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much once again. We'll talk
all
to you
all
soon.
All the best.
Take
Thanks
care.
For having me.
Thanks, Randy.
Yeah.
All right, folks. That was Randy Marshall from Newsday. And there you have it, folks. A little more conversation on Belmont, even a little bit on the Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that we got that in at the end about the Coliseum, how that is not a viable option long term.
Right.
Because it's not. It's absolutely not. As much as everybody on Long Island would love that to be the case, staying in their original home and all that good stuff, it's just not possible. The building's too small. It can't accommodate the media. It can't accommodate the broadcasts.
It can accommodate the bathroom.
And they have no suites.
No.
They have six.
No. Listen.
That's zero.
Look, I will tell you from somebody who has walked in every inch of that building that it is not. It is literally ready to fall down. It is a mess inside.
Even after the improvements made.
Well, the improvements were not made to the infrastructure of the building. The improvements were made to the exterior and to the
lipstick
on a pig, because that's exactly what it is. And you know, I can tell you that the NHL has a control room where they control the cameras and this and that and everything. And there is literally just like insulation and wires hanging from the ceiling. When everyone says, oh, it's not a viable building, and oh, but it's so pretty now and it looks so nice and they put new floors in, that's the interior of the building is exactly the same. There is no way that the $60 million that they spent on fixing this building up was going to be able to fix any of that. There's asbestos still in the building. Asbestos abatement is incredibly expensive. For them
saying,
to tear the
saying.
Building down, it would cost probably what they spent to do the upgrades that they did. So the building is not – it's old. It needs to be it's good for what they're using it for now. It is a minor league facility. In essence, that's what it is. It is a secondary facility. It's not one of these big. And if you look at Madison Square, go into Madison Square Garden. I was there when I went to Sebastian Maniscalco. You walk around, that building is unbelievable. And they put a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of money into upgrading that building. But they did it the right way. They took all the old stuff out and put all new stuff in so that they're able to do everything that they need to do and have the latest technology and not have the problems that a Coliseum would have, because it's an old building and the county does not have the money to do the upgrades, and which is why it fell into such disarray. So that's – the NHL said it. The developer said it. The team owner said it. You know, even the county will recognize the fact that they can't play there year-round. They would have to be millions upon millions of dollars spent in order to do that. And I asked Randy that question specifically for that reason, was that it has been said flat out that it is not a facility – built for NHL hockey, and they're doing this because they're doing it for us. Basically, that's what it is. They're doing it for us, so we can go to the games and relive our childhood dreams of watching this team, you know, back at the Coliseum before the end of the season.
I'm sure, there's more to it than that, but sure, we can go with that.
But what other reason is there? I mean, so is everyone can go and stand on a line for a hot dog for 45 minutes before they, you know, they go back and then another 45 minutes to go to the bathroom. I mean. It is what it is at this point.
It's the best solution to a bad situation. That's what the Coliseum is right now.
Right, right.
Everybody knows all the issues with Barclays and all the complaints. And look, this is a nice temporary solution while Belmont gets built. which, folks, I know Randy didn't give you 100% stamp approval. I am,
it
and you
is.
Can you can throw shoes at me if I'm wrong, but it's going to happen. And, look, I will take latest September in Randy's best guess. We're not going to hold her to that, but, you know, in her best guess, I'm okay with September. But, you know, I think it's going to come a little sooner than that. Okay, maybe it won't be May. Maybe it won't be June. But, you know, June, July, August, okay, summertime. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It's look, I don't care when they start. As long as they're moving into that building for the 21-22 season, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
And it sounds to me, just based on what Randy had to say, like it's going to take a real out-of-left-field situation to crumple this down. Because, again, it's not like it was with the Lighthouse. You don't have all these politicians involved on opposite ends of the coin.
Right.
Playing political football, as everybody said, but that's none of that's going on. And you know, I'm sure we could add another 5-10 minutes of Randy talking about this. But like, you look at what happened with Amazon too, and that's a loss for Cuomo. And he's been a big driver behind this whole Belmont thing. So if he wasn't motivated to get this thing through to begin with, he's not going to want to take another L here.
Right.
You know, with Belmont.
And
him and his constituents are going to do whatever they can to make sure this thing goes through. And it just seems like, you know, again, there's no definitive opposition in the sense that there's nobody with any sort of pull or power that's really, you know, getting in the way of this thing happening. Mm. You know, Randy says they've had a lot of good faith conversations. They've been very good as far as, you know, listening to the people in office, community and stuff like that, trying to, you know, accommodate them as best as they can. Look, there's not going to be a perfect solution. They're not going to make everybody happy. But at the end of the day, they're doing as best as they can. And as Randy said as well, as long as when this report comes out and, you know, when they finally show up with these answers, look, this is what we plan on doing with this. This is what we plan on doing with that. And as long as it's satisfactory enough for these people to say, okay, sounds good, it's going to go through. And I just don't see, you know, anything getting in the way. And again, another point that was brought up is this thing about the lawsuit. A, that's if any lawsuits are brought to begin with. And B, they have to have some sort of merit to them.
They can't
even get, you know, passed through. And I just think that there's too many people, you know, in the right places that are on board for this thing to make it go through, that it's going to happen, folks. And I get it. I know that a lot of people are saying until there's a shovel in the ground, I'll see you when I believe it. I'll believe it when I see it. All that stuff. I get it. I understand. I mean, look. I mean, this is bitten, thrice shy here.
Right. Of course.
You know. You had the Lighthouse. You had the referendum. Both went down the tube. I mean, look. The referendum was a show. But anyway,
it was.
You know, look. This is a completely different set of circumstances. Different people involved. We know it's the same team, the same franchise, but it's a completely different scenario.
Different owners.
We're
different
in the home stretch here.
So.
We're in the home stretch. And it's going to happen, even if it comes a month, 2-3 months later than expected. But look, a minor delay like that is typical when it comes to a project of this scale.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Did they say in the beginning, what, maybe it was April 1st or May 1st, whatever it is?
They were looking for May.
Even if the shovels don't hit the ground on May 1st, which it sounds like they won't. It sounds like they won't.
Right, right.
But
well,
even if it's July.
They were looking at it. They were hoping that the environmental impact statement would be out in the beginning of the second quarter, which is Randy just said.
And because there were further conversations and further concerns, they said, okay, we're gonna turn around. We're going to put some more work into this. So, again, they're pretty much covering all bases here, and they're doing everything that they need to do to make sure that this is, you know, as satisfactory as possible to the people who are actually going to make the decisions on this. So again, barring just some out of left field, you know, curveball that nobody expected, this thing is going through.
Yeah, I mean, this is the other, you know, everyone hears, oh, they're gonna sue. There's gonna be a lawsuit. There's a judge that has to actually listen to these things. So if you have two quote unquote mega malls on Long Island, which, I mean, if you want to talk about Americana and
well,
Roosevelt
like Randy
Field,
said, this is not
it's
a mega mall.
That's my point. So if your group is called, you know, so and so against the mega mall, and then you bring a report, you bring a lawsuit saying that we don't want a mega mall, and then the lawyer for the developer will go in and say, okay, Roosevelt Field, mega mall, Americana, mega mall, Walt Whitman, mega mall. This is half the size of that. And then the judge will
be
like,
it's not even a mall. It's like a...
Well, I know, but that's the point. But the judge is going to look at this and be like, okay, well, you're against a mega mall. That's not what this is.
Yeah.
Thrown out.
There's
a lot
of smart people involved in this.
Exactly.
And
like, it's not just
sure
someone can't just... Some guy with a stain on his shirt can't walk into the courthouse and create a lawsuit and derail the whole... this you know, multi-billion dollar project. Like, there are other... There are, you know, the developers have smart lawyers, too. So, It seems as if they can get the traffic thing and the transit, which we all talked about, I always thought that would be a possibility that, you know, there could be something worked out between the state, the MTA, and maybe the developers in order to kind of get this whole railroad thing on track here. Because if you wait for the MTA, God only knows. But the point is that if they're able to get that portion of it straightened out, there's very little not to gain from the residents of the area, because to gain a railroad stop there to take into Manhattan, I told you, a buddy of mine lives, a guy I'm close with lives only four blocks from this area,
yeah,
and he has to walk a half a mile to get a bus to take him to the subway in order to get into Manhattan. That adds 45 minutes to an hour onto his commute each way,
right,
every single day. Right. If he had to just walk to the train station and take the Long Island Railroad into Penn Station, he would cut all of that other portion of his his commute out, and that's big for that area because there's nothing.
Sure. But like Randy said, it sounds like that's going to be more of a longer term thing, and I'm sure they will do something to improve that whole situation with the station, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not going to be a full-time station anytime soon. They may, you know, make it, I guess, more active once the development goes through, mm-hmm. but that, apparently, you know, there's a lot of money involved, there's a lot of imperfections involved with the fact that it's just a spur. We don't have to get into all that, but look, as far as we're concerned as Islander fans, as long as the building gets built, that's all that matters.
Right.
Okay, everything mm-hmm. else is dressing, you know, but I'm feeling real confident about it, folks. I'm hoping you do, too. And if it takes a shovel hitting the ground, fair enough, but it's not far away. But the good thing is we had this conversation now, and we got it out of the way because, look, the main focus here for all of us now is there's 14 games left in the season. We're less than a month until the end of the season. I mean, this is it. This is crunch time. This team mm-hmm. has got to show everybody what they're made of. It's great, everything they did up until this point. They surprised all of us. This season has been a lot more fun than any of us could have expected. And now they just got to kind of put a bow on it for the regular season and give us whatever they can in the playoffs. But they just got to close out strong here. They got to get their heads together. They got to get the game back on track because this last stretch, two weeks, has not been the Islander hockey we've come to know throughout the season. But again, I put my faith in Barry Trotz that he's going to get these guys going the right way from here on out. But Tony, I'm thinking we'll have one more quick break. We'll do the hero, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
That sounds like it's a solid plan.
All right, folks, in case you forgot, you're listening to Hockey Night in New York. Tune in live or for the archives at HockeyNightNY.com. We will take one last break, and then it is time for the hero of the week.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Hockey Night in New York at HockeyNightNY.com, the premier live podcast covering the New York Islanders and the NHL at large from our studios right here on Long Island, hosted by Sean Cuthbert and Tony Stabile. Tune in weekly during the season Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for insights on the team, great special guests, and commentary on all the happenings around the league. If you happen to miss us live, all shows can be streamed or downloaded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at the same address, HockeyNightNY.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Stitcher, where you can subscribe and never miss a show, no matter what your preferred platform. Question for the guys? Comments? Interested in a sponsorship? Please contact us at HockeyNightNewYork@gmail.com for any and all inquiries. We appreciate all the support, and as always, let's go Islanders! Love repping your favorite Long Island hockey team? Can't get enough orange and blue swag? Look no further than Yes Men Outfitters, the independent lifestyle brand born on the island to support the game, the team, and the players you love. Visit YesMenOutfitters.com for a wide selection of themed shirts, hats, hoodies, and yes, even pajamas. All apparel is designed and created in-house with the same passion and dedication as your favorite team on the ice. So upgrade your wardrobe and show off your pride today by visiting YesMenOutfitters.com. And don't forget to use promo code HockeyNightNY for 10% off your order. That's YesMenOutfitters.com.
back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Hockey Night in New York. Tune in live for the archives at HockeyNightNY.com. It is now time for the Hero of the Week. And, Tony, there was a moment preparing for this show that I did consider going the zero route.
Really?
I did. Yeah, but how can you do it with two wins, as ugly as they might have been? Right, I guess you still got to go with it. You still got to go with the hero.
Right. Oh, all right, I see that.
So, folks, here we are, Hero of the Week. And, Tony, I went first last week. So you know what that means? You're up, pal. Tony's the bill. Let's hear it. Hero of the Week. What do you got?
Great.
That's a good start.
I wasn't really prepared for this, so, you know.
Thanks for showing up, Tony. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate it.
No, I think you have to look at one guy who had a really good game, and a game that they absolutely needed to have. You saw what happened last Sunday night. It was a tough game on Tuesday. They ended up getting the win in the shootout, but the Islanders had to come out and have a great game on Thursday in Ottawa, no less. And they did that, and they did that because a guy who we really expected very, very little from this year came through in a big way, and that was Valtteri Filppula. Two goals on a night, took five shots on net. This is a guy who's got 68 shots on the season, took five shots on net in this game. This guy has scored more big goals this year than I can even remember. He's played really way above anybody's expectation about what's happened. He's got 15 goals, 13 assists. He's a plus 16 on the season. Like I said, he's got those 15 goals on 68 shots, which is a 22% shooting percentage. Three of those 15 goals are game winners. He has been a breath of fresh air on this team. He is a guy who was brought in, and it was, again, took a lot of heat from a lot of different analytics people saying that this guy was a mess in Philadelphia. He's not going to be a help, and he has been a anchor on that third line with Leo Komarov and his rotating left wing on who you never know who it's going to be on a nightly basis. Filppula has done what we've asked him to do and all more. I have to give him my Hero of the Week this week because big game on Thursday, he came through in a big way. Filppula is my Hero of the Week.
Well, Tony, you saved me and the listeners a lot of time because that's my guy. And the truth is, not a lot to choose from this week. And he was the one standout. He got two goals. He already said everything that needs to be said. One honorable mention I'll throw out there was the combined efforts in that 2-1 goal in the game at the Coliseum between Dal Colle and Devon Taves.
What a beautiful pass.
Beautiful pass. And how about the reception from Taves?
Oh, absolutely.
Gloves it, drops it down on the ice, boom, puts it up in the net. Beautiful goal.
Over the
beautiful
shoulder,
goal.
No less. So.
Yeah,
beautiful
that was a gorgeous goal. So that's my little honorable mention. So at least I can add something to the pot here for the Hero of the Week. But, yeah, it's hard to pick anybody else over Filppula. I mean, he's got 15 goals. It's all been said. But, I mean, God, you know, Lou was trashed for this signing over.
Trashed.
He was trashed.
Absolutely trashed.
And got to give credit where it's due. Even if he's still not a perfect player at the age he's at, he's absolutely been a huge factor for this team. So, kudos to you, Val. Kudos to you, Lou, the Hero of the Week.
Good choice.
Okay, couple quick hits here, and then we'll wrap this here thing up. We noted Bill Torrey night, poor showing by the team, but great showing by the Islanders. The night before, mm-hmm. they had a nice little event for him at Northwell
at the
practice facility. Mm-hmm. They brought all the family in, and they got some alumni in back from the days when Bill was running things. So one
Volek in the building. David Volek.
David Volek.
Love
the 93
it.
Hero.
Love
hero
David
of the
Volek.
Hero of the 93.
Yes.
Hero of the year there.
Hero of that series, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, look, we've touched on how the Islanders have done a great job of reaching out to the alumni and bringing people back. And one of note who I was about to mention before you rudely interrupted me with David Volek.
I'm going to mention this.
Was the OG 27 John Tinelli, the OG
JT.
That's right. So, I mean, this is a guy who has kind of disappeared, you know, for a long time as far as his relationship with the franchise. They didn't end on good terms, and for whatever reason, it took a real long time for things to get patched up. It's finally happened, and Tinelli was involved in the festivities this past weekend.
He was.
And there was even a quote that came from Tinelli that said, look, John Ledecky is pretty much the reason why I'm here,
he
the
is.
Reason why I'm kind
yep.
of back in the fold here. So it just goes to show you the job that these new owners are doing, not only, you know, putting money into the team, obviously going for this arena at Belmont, but also the outreach that they've made with the former players. You know, it's great to see guys like Tonelli and stuff like that coming back. So
great.
So great stuff. I mean, they're really trying to make this a first-class organization. And that's a promise that they made since they came in. And the fact that they're making the former players feel welcome, they're making the fans feel welcome, they're coming back. I mean, look at the ball that everybody's having at the Coliseum. You know, look, I know there's a lot of nostalgia involved, but, I mean, that place has pretty much been more or less packed out since they started playing there this season,
great.
Which is great to
mm-hmm.
see. So, look, we're out there, Islander fans. You know, we're just looking for a reason to come back. You know, you talk about
no
all these years with the low attendance and, you know, the scare of being moved and stuff like that. If this ownership group keeps taking this franchise in the direction that it's going, the fans are going to come back. And Belmont, you're not going to see the numbers in Belmont like you have in Barclays and Coliseum in years past. If this team continues to be relevant, continues to be successful, and it keeps continuing the way it's going, I think we're finally going to see a dawn of a new era with this Islander franchise.
Well, absolutely. And with the current management group in place and the current ownership group in place and the coaching staff. And, you know, you've seen since Lou has taken
all
over.
All top flight.
Exactly. And that's exactly what you want to talk about. You know, a lot of people have talked about the Honest product this year and, you know, the guys that Lou signed and the fact that there weren't any changes made and everything. But Lou said right from the beginning that this was going to be an evaluation year. But where he made all of his changes are in the front office and on the coaching staff, and all of those hires were all A-plus hires. So there is no question whether that's going to translate into an on-ice product. And I know that there have been people who have said that it's going to be a tough sell for free agents and this and that. It absolutely is not, because you look at the ownership that's in place, you look at the, you know, at Lou at the top of this whole thing, and the coaching staff that Barry, and the respect that Barry carries. I'm sorry, but it is a much easier sell than in years past with this organization. There's no question about it.
The proof will be in the pudding when that time comes. Yes, I can't believe I just used that phrase. But it's definitely not going to be as tough. It will absolutely be easier. We'll find out how much easier. But, I mean, with all the items that we just listed, you know, it's absolutely a much more – it looks
desirable,
much. The
okay.
optics are much better now
yes.
than they were before this ownership group took over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, with the shovels finally hitting the ground and all this stuff going on, it's going to be a much better outlook for players and agents that are actually going to, you know, consider the Islanders, where they probably, you know, just laughed them off the phone in years past when it came to free agency. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Yeah,
there.
No, and but, I just wanted to bring something else up about Tonelli, and you said about how it ended badly for him. I don't know if you know the story for him. He was traded to the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I read that story.
He
yeah.
did, about
so,
him
yeah,
having
Arthur
to change
Stable
locker
did it,
room.
Right? Arthur Stable?
Was it Arthur that did it? It's one of somebody did it, but him having to change the locker rooms, there was no guarantee
was
that
athletic,
he was
though.
Even going to show up. They couldn't find him. He
yeah.
literally left the Coliseum,
yeah.
in, you know, in, almost in protest. And, you know, and the fact of how everything left, and, you know, there had been so many things about him not coming back and, you know, wanting to come back. And there were some rumors that he wanted appearance fees, which you don't know what to believe from who anymore. But I'll tell you right now, I was thrilled to read that John Tonelli was at the Bill Torrey ceremony. If you didn't see the story, the Islanders named the practice facility, the practice ice rink
yes.
that they practice on, the Bill Torrey rink. The other rink at Northville Ice, because there's two rinks. That's why it was called Twin Rinks. The other rink
you, Tony.
Was named – well, some people don't know. You don't know. So the other rink was named for Al Arbor after he passed away, the main rink, which everybody skates on, and then the rink that the Islanders practice on. It's a separate sheet of ice that has been named for Bill Torrey. It is great to see those two names in the Islander practice facility. And you have to remember that the practice facility is also the team offices. That's where that's where Lou's office is Barry's office is. That's where everything is done out of that building now. So to walk in and to see those two names on the building and over top of the sheets of ice is a tremendous honor. It's a beautiful thing, and excellent job by the Islanders to get that done.
Absolutely. Great job by the Islander franchise, bad job by the team on the ice. They could have done Billy better on Saturday.
Agreed. No
okay.
question agreed.
All right. So two other interesting notes, and then we'll say farewell. Pat LaFontaine back in the headlines locally, because apparently he will be partnering in on this intended rink out in Ronkonkoma. Mm-hmm. They're looking to build a complex out there. I would say similar in the sense that it's more than just an arena to Belmont, but I believe it's the whole project at large is perhaps smaller in scope. But they have decided that they are going to reduce the size of the arena. At first, they were looking to make it NHL size. Now the intention is to make it 7,500 seats. I don't know much more about it. I don't know how realistic this project is. I don't know how close it is to happening. I don't know if it's just a proposal, but it's people are trying to make it happen. Pat LaFontaine is partnering in on it, and apparently he will be tasked with bringing an AHL team into the fold should mm-hmm. that arena be built.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, look, more hockey arenas, more hockey on the island, more professional hockey, Pat LaFontaine being involved. I have no problem with it.
No, I mean, I don't have a problem with the building. To think that they could build an NHL arena, another NHL arena on Long Island, is almost comical. They couldn't build the one for the team that currently is here. Now you're going to build one for a team that doesn't even exist. So
yeah.
I never really thought that that was possible. You want to put a 7,500-seat arena where a minor league hockey team could play? Go crazy. You look at you look how well the Long Island Ducks have done in that foray with being a minor league baseball team. It's an alternative. It also would be in Suffolk County, which is you have some people that live far out in Suffolk County. It would be not such a long
right.
commute to have to go all the way to Belmont or to Uniondale or to Brooklyn, wherever they're playing at the current moment. The point is that it's anything that brings hockey to Long Island, and you know it's a positive thing. So
yeah.
it's nothing
cool,
to
man.
Do with the Islanders. It's an AHL team that would be there. All the power to it. That'd be great.
Yeah, I guess the only way it ends up becoming something to do with the Islanders is if they bring the Sound Tigers over there. But I don't even think that's possible.
I think
they're committed to Bridgeport.
Well, they have because they passed this whatever resolution they were looking to do up there to do the improvements in the arena. The Islander franchise is on board.
Okay.
They're actually, I think, running. The Bridgeport team is actually running all of the improvements that will be made around and into the arena. So
maybe
that
the Wolfpack
seems,
goes over there.
It's possible. But anything is possible at this point. But
yeah.
I don't think the Sound Tigers will be moving. I think they're going to be staying in Bridgeport long term. It works for the Islanders at that point. But something else, another team in the area, it's only a positive, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
more hockey to watch.
More hockey to watch.
I'm
and
cool
it's,
with it.
It's great. You know, young players, young hockey. More sheets of ice. You know, you always know that it's always expensive to get a sheet of ice if you play a pickup or whatever the case is in a men's league and whatnot. Have another sheet of ice around to have the house facilities like that can house games and tournaments or whatever. That's only a positive thing. That's great.
Agreed, Tony. And the last little fun fact I'll end with here is the Coliseum referendum was mentioned earlier. And it just so happens that a familiar face that was involved in that tried to push that whole show through was none other than Ed Mangano, former Nassau County executive, who was found guilty of conspiracy to obstruct justice, bribery, and wire fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that man is going to jail, along with his wife.
His wife, too. Yeah.
So good job by them. Way to go, guys. You did it.
Look, I think anybody who saw the evidence against Ed Mangano knew the writing was on the wall that this guy was eventually going to end up in jail. They retried after there was a mistrial in the first first trial. They retried it because they were that confident in this case. And look, he this guy is not a good guy, and he took advantage of his spot.
He's a bad hombre.
He is, man. He's
right.
a bad hombre, and okay. he brought shame, and now he go to the box, and he will.
Very nice.
Like that, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, well but yeah, it's look, this is not a good guy, and he's getting what's coming to him, and that's it. You know, and his wife now actually will get a job. In prison, maybe she'll get the laundry or something like that. Who knows? But
okay.
Sorry, Ed.
Sorry, Ed. Yeah, just a little fun fact. It's a little Islander related, so why not throw it out
there? See you, pal.
All right. Well, I think that'll about do it, folks. The last thing I want to do before we go is just to remind you, big night coming up on Saturday, April 6th, the Islanders' final regular season game of the season against the Washington Capitals in D.C. could have huge implications on where and who the Islanders will be playing once the playoff starts. Don't forget, that will be at Boss Croker's in Wantagh, 1871 Wantagh Avenue, hosted by ourselves at Hockey Night New York, Isles Meetups, and Yes Men Outfitters. Pre-game show at 5 o'clock. Game starts at 7, like we said. Raffles, prizes, all that good stuff. $3 pints of Miller's, 40-cent wings. We will have more guests to announce. Follow Isles Meetups at Isles Meetups. Follow Yes Men Outfitters at Yes Men Outfitter. Follow us at Hockey Night NY. Follow Tony, if you're into that sort of thing, at Tony Stabile. Follow myself at Shawnee Hockey. And again, you can listen to us live or for the archives 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 a year at HockeyNightNY.com. Cue the music, Tony. Let's go. Let's go. You can also get us on Stitcher. You can also get us on iTunes. You can also get us on Google Podcasts. You can also get us on Spotify. You can also get us on SoundCloud and many other places. So, folks, just search for Hockey Night NY, Hockey Night in New York. You will find us. You can listen to us. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Take care.